you know any places any Sega nerds hang out around here?
And welcome to the Sega Nerdcast, episode 68. I am Chris, the editor of Sega Nerds. And with me this week is my buddy Andrew. How's it going, man?
Oh, I'm good. How are you, my friend?
I'm well rested today because I slept in extra late for that fall back bullshit that we had today.
Fall back?
Yeah, we had to turn the clocks back today.
Oh, daylight savings.
Daylight savings. Yeah.
Lousy fathers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, we just had that as well. And it is weird because you're like your body's so used to certain time frames, and I work really late some days, like till 9 o'clock, and my body's like, it's 10 o'clock, and I'm like, it's 9 o'clock, and it's like, you should be in bed by now, man.
It really sucks. Yeah, I mean, I'm kinda used to having to like acclimate to time change a lot because I'm traveling quite often, and sometimes it's completely different countries, it's halfway around the world, so my body's constantly having to do that. So an hour doesn't really make a big difference for me. It's just a weird thing, though, that we feel like we can just completely change the time arbitrarily, like to suit our needs. It's just like, doing that? I don't know.
That is funny because we can do that. It kind of puts in perspective how arbitrary the systems and mechanisms we've placed into human life, like money, is. Just think about money for 2 seconds. It's just a piece of paper that we say is worth something, but it's really just a piece of paper.
Well, it's even, yeah, and if you like really think of that even more, like some people are willing to let you have sex with them just to give you that, to get that piece of paper that we just put all this like artificial importance, and in reality it can do absolutely nothing for you.
It's called my life every day, man.
I know, totally. Graham isn't going to be able to make it. Yeah, well, I was just going to say, Graham, unfortunately, is under the weather, so he's not going to be able to make it onto the show, unfortunately. We think he may have come down with some sort of STD. We don't really know. It could be Ebola. Maybe he is in quarantine
Ebola
right now. Yeah.
I actually went to a Halloween party last night, and my costume was Ebola.
Oh, that's awesome.
I drew a picture of the virus on a piece of paper and just hung it around my neck, and I was like, what am I?
Oh, that is great. I was almost thinking of having my twins go as like one as like an Ebola patient, and the other one as like a doctor in all the Ebola like gear. That would be kind of cool.
That would have been pretty funny. Or you could dress them all as different physical disabilities or ailments. Like, one could be influenza, one could be hepatitis.
Oh, geez, that would be kind of funny. We actually, you know, speaking of Halloween, yeah, we had a lot of fun with Halloween this year too. We went out on base to go trick or treat because out here we live kind of it's a rural, really rural area, so it's just like an old kind of old country road that runs in front of the house. There's no sidewalks or anything like that, so it's incredibly dangerous to even, you know, try to go running on, let alone taking the kids trick-or-treating. So we went out there, hanging out with some friends and stuff, and the kids had a great time. Odin, I think he probably won for, like, the best costume and also, like, accessory that went along with it, because we had him go as a farmer, but he has this John Deere tractor, like a power wheel, that he rides around all the time. So we brought that with us, and instead of walking with all the other kids, he just rode his power wheel around, and it was hilarious. He'd drive it, like, right up into people's yards and, like, right up to their door, and then he'd get off and, like, go up and have his thing. They loved it. Everyone thought it was hilarious, and it was really funny. It was pretty cool.
Did you hitch up a little like trailer to it so we could put all this candy inside? Or
we brought the trailer because he does have a trailer that goes along with it, and we were gonna just let all the kids kind of put their bags in the back. But when he was adamant, he didn't want us to hitch the trailer to it, so he just wanted to drive without the trailer. So I think he feels like he just drags him down sometimes. Yeah,
he wanted to really tear the ground up with that thing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had a good time. Also, there was that big PS4 2.0 update this past week. I don't know if you updated your PS4 yet. Man, there's some really cool features that it added. I know some people were having some issues with it. It was, I think, like bricking some people's PS4s, which is not good. But mine is fine. It's the rest mode.
They changed standby mode to rest mode, which I don't fully understand the difference, because as far as I know, it's got the same functionality. And apparently what's been happening is people have been putting it in rest mode, which I do to download and to charge my controller. And it's been unable to actually turn back on from rest mode sometimes.
That's not good. So I guess people are just not supposed to put it in rest mode right now until they come up with a fix, or what?
Well, I think that's the idea behind it. I mean, you don't have to use rest mode. It's not mandatory, but it's handy because you can use it to, again, charge your controllers or power downloads. So I don't know. But just don't use rest mode if you're listening and you use your PS4 right now.
That's not good. Yeah, because I would just put it in standby mode, like when I'd go to bed. And that way, it's charging my controller. So that's kind of scary.
I'll give you a handy tip though. If you do want to charge your PS4 controller and you don't have like a long enough cable for the console to go to the console, you can actually use a Vita charger to charge your PS4 controller.
A Vita charger, you said?
Yeah, you just plug the cable in and it'll charge it.
Very cool. I didn't know that. Keep that in mind. What probably the coolest feature for me, at least, and it sounds kind of silly, but the YouTube app on the PS4 is really amazing. It's done really, really well. There were some issues at first with people being able to sign into their account, but there's a way, if you go, there's a link that you have to go to, and it's you have to be basically revoke access to the PlayStation Network in your YouTube like settings. Once you do that, then you can go back into your PS4 and re-authenticate, because there's like this weird two-step authentication. You can re-authenticate it, and it will then go in fine. So once I did that, it was really good. Last night, the wife and I and our kids were all sitting down, and I decided to fire up the YouTube app and just see what was kind of around. We ended up watching Punky Brewster, like the very first episode of Punky Brewster. And my daughter absolutely loved it. My daughter is almost 8 years old now, so she's like right in that age.
She's the right demographic for that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that was around the age my wife, when she was a little girl, was really into Punky Brewster. So my wife was like telling her all about it and how important and how cool she thought Punky Brewster was as a kid. And my daughter loved it, so she like binge watched like 8 episodes last night. My wife and I both fell asleep on the couch. We woke up and she was still watching episodes. It was really funny. So we watched that. Watched a few more today. That was a good show, man. I don't know. I loved that show when I was a kid.
So. That I really liked that, and I liked. What was the one with the kid who was a doctor?
Is it Doogie Howser?
Doogie Howser. I used to watch that endlessly as a kid, because my dad recorded all the episodes on VHS tapes. And I would just like rewatch them over and over again. Man, I was a Neil Patrick Harris fan before it was popular on the internet. How about that, everybody?
I loved Doogie Howser as a kid, too. I watched it.
That's a great show. I reckon you should watch that with your kids as well.
I have to watch that. Yeah, I have to. And once we go through, I didn't realize there's only like 3 or 4 seasons of Punky Brewster, so once we get through that, I think we'll go into maybe something else. We also watched an episode of Small Wonder. Do you remember that one?
Vaguely. I think we only got a few episodes of that over here before they canceled it.
That's too bad. It was basically, it's the same scenario. It's like a suburban family, but the twist with this one is the dad is, he's some sort of engineer or inventor or something like that. He works with computers a lot. He ends up building this artificial intelligence, this robot. It's a little girl, and he's trying to get it off the ground and get his boss to do it. And so it's this robot girl who's actually a real live person, in reality, but in the show she's a robot. And she's kind of, I don't know, she just kind of walks around and does stuff. But I loved it as a kid. It was one of those that I kind of, when I was like, man, I was like probably 7 or 8 maybe, or when I started watching. Maybe a little older, but I thought she was hot when I was a kid. So.
Oh, man, do you know who else? This, I don't know if this was your time, but on Nickelodeon there was a show called The Secret World of Alex Mack. And are you familiar with that? Or
I remember the name of the show, but I think it may have been a little after my time when I was really watching.
I think it was.
Yeah. I remember the show, but I don't really remember much of it.
Well, the girl that was in that, she was like, I had the biggest crush on her, and I used to watch every episode of that, and used to get like physically angry when someone were to turn the TV on the channel and be like, I'm watching Alex Mack, fuck off.
That's funny. I was really into Hey Dude, Salute Your Shorts, Pete and Pete went on like Nickelodeon. What's funny is Hey Dude, there was a girl on there called Melody, I think that was her name. Anyway, she's married to Ben Stiller today. So,
whoa.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. But she's in Zoolander and a couple other Ben Stiller movies today, so she still does a little bit of acting. So, anyway, enough about me. Enough about me and my YouTube watching. What have you been up to, man?
I got a couple of commissions recently to do video projects for various things, which I can't really talk about, but I can tell you about them. But yeah, they were basically just like short little trailers and clips and things, which was really cool to be asked to do that, because it's nice to have some recognition of my work. Other than that, I've been working on a game that Chris knows about, which is like a parody of the social justice movement on the internet. It's literally called Social Justice Warriors. That's the working title. And again, it's too early to really talk too much about it. But if you've ever played a game called Incredible Crisis on PlayStation 1, it's kind of in a similar vein where it's just like this over the top ridiculous parody of modern life. Because Incredible Crisis was that kind of game, parodying Japanese life in the late 90s in Japan. And this is going to be like a parody of Social Justice Warriors. So, actually, if anyone is a pixel artist, I'm looking for, it's going to be in that vein, but it's for a specific reason. So if you are a pixel artist, feel free to let us, either Chris or me know, and I mean, he'll forward it on to me, and we're looking for someone to join the team who can do art for us. So yeah, let us know. So that's going to be really fun. And speaking of the YouTube functionality on PS4, I've been using the YouTube sharing functionality to actually share some really funny things that have been happening in The Evil Within. I don't know if you've played that, Chris. Have you played that yet?
No, I haven't played it yet.
Well, it's Shinji Mikami's return to horror, and I love survival horror. I actually reviewed Resident Evil on Saturn. You've probably seen the review for the Horror Fest. And it is a great game, but it is so unfinished. Like, there's so many physics glitches. One of them was I was walking down a flooded path in a cave, and this rat was just kind of like floating slowly in the air.
That's funny.
I think it was meant to be in the water, but it risen a foot in the air, and I walked up to it, and I was just like looking at it, and then I was like, it's not going to move. So I walked into it to see if it would do something, and then it just kind of tumbled down into the water really slowly.
It's almost like that that floating gun in Alien Isolation that just is there and for no reason.
Other than to be a floating gun.
I think you even posted a photo of it, like in our Facebook group, I think.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I think kind of the same one, so it's weird. I thought you could grab it or something. I was like, well, there's a gun. Maybe I could pick it out of thin air and equip it, but you couldn't do anything with it.
Well, another time I was holding a crossbow, because one of your main weapons is a crossbow in the game, and you can have harpoons on it. And I quickly switched to my handgun to reload it, and I had a harpoon sticking out of my arm. So that is it's a really bad game in that respect, but it's also really good. So yeah, that's what I've been up to.
Awesome. Yeah, it's gonna be it'll be neat seeing some of those projects you're working on, like here in the future, those video projects. Let us know once you can talk more about them, and I'll check them out for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you should see some of them soon, so I'll keep you guys updated.
Sweet. Let's get on to some news now. And since Graham isn't here, Andrew, I think you're going to be handling the news duties this week.
Why, thank you. Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, it's the news desk with Andrew. So sit back and relax and enjoy the soothing sound of my voice. So, now, you may know that Sega recently announced Valkyria Chronicles releasing on PC on November the 11th. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it'll release for $19.99 standard retail. Actually, can we call it retail? I don't think we can. Whatever. what's more, the game's going to actually include all the DLC that the original PlayStation 3 version received, including a Hard X mode, Edie's mission under the Edie detachment, Selvuria's mission behind her blue flame, and Challenge of the Edie detachment. Steam has a game marked down to $17.99 right now, but ladies and gentlemen, you can go to getgamesgo.com and get it for $14.99. Now, we've got the announcement posted on Sega Nerds, so feel free to have a clicky around if you're interested. And while we're at it, let's talk about Hatsune Miku Project Diva F Second getting all the Japanese DLC. Now, that's actually a really big deal because that doesn't always happen. I followed a lot of PlayStation 3 games imports from Japan when the console was, you know, alive and kicking. And we used to get maybe half the DLC or none. But yeah, Sega detailed downloadable content plans recently that include free content for Hatsune Miku Project Diva F Second, thereby matching the entire Japanese. Now, that's going to fully start from the 9th of December, so keep your eyes open. They announced two sales initiatives right now, the Song Club and the Costume Club. That's delivering 6 months of content, skins and song content following the game's launch on November 18, 2014, so keep your eyes open after the game launches. And fans who purchase the Song Club will receive every single rhythm game song published in the upcoming months, well over 10 songs in total, ladies and gentlemen, while the Costume Club, which retails for $69.99, and I should say the Song Club's retailing for $29.99, will feature more than 45 costumes, which is a lot. They're regularly priced at $2.99, so you are going to save a bit of money if you grab the club. It's 25% you're going to save over the total lifespan of the offering, so make sure you do that. They'll both be available for purchase from the PlayStation Network following the game's launch on November the 18th. Now, Chris Showdown, Codemasters recently announced in cooperation with Sega Amusements, a new arcade game. Now, these are side-by-side cabinets. Showdown, according to Sega, delivers arcade thrills and full-contact racing in every event, such as an electrifying festival of energy, speed, and destruction that demands repeat play. Now, that's the official description from Sega, ladies and gentlemen. Players will fully commit on every corner and overtake as they take on spectacular circuits set across the world. Showdown's tracks are littered with obstacles, pinch points, multiple routes, and ramps to deliver action-packed, white-knuckle action in every race. Players are fully immersed in the action with the game's stunning graphics, and it goes on and on. It's a lot of spiel. Basically, it looks like an amazing arcade experience that really is reminiscent of. It looks like a combination of Micro Machines and Destruction Derby.
Yeah, you know, I didn't realize it when they first announced it, but it's actually part of the Dirt series of Codemasters racing games. Yeah. It was released on consoles a couple years ago, back in 2012. So it looks like they're taking the console version of the game and doing an arcade port, which is kind of interesting because you don't really see that all too often, a pre-existing console game. No. And PC game going to their arcades, but it's kind of neat. They're dropping the Dirt name.
Yeah, they're dropping the Dirt name and going for just Showdown,
right?
Which is interesting because they're differentiating it from the brand, but not altogether because they haven't explicitly stated it's not. I mean, they've clearly stated that it is part of the Dirt series. But I mean, I don't know if I'm getting the vibe right. But again, Destruction Derby meets Micro Machines. Are you seeing that from the trailer, Chris?
Yeah, it looks a lot like that. And when I first saw that, I was really thinking Destruction Derby. I got that vibe from it big time when I first saw it. The game got some pretty good reviews when it first came out. It got an 8 from Eurogamer. They said it had brilliant racing disciplines, accessible handling, gorgeous presentation, and tremendous variety. So Game Trailers gave it an 8.5 out of 10. So it looks like it's a pretty good game. And, hey, you know, new arcade games coming out from Sega, I'm always excited about, you know.
Well, Sega Amusements never disappoints. He's hoping that it's going to be one of those games that really stands the test of time in arcades, because I still think there's going to be a niche for them. I mean, they are disappearing, but we have a popular arcade chain over here called Time Zone, and the fact that there's still space for a franchise, I think, means that arcade machines are probably going to have a bright future from now on.
Have you seen the Plants vs. Zombies arcade around yet? I think that's been released, hasn't it?
No, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a one that Sega teamed up with. Was it, who owns that? Is it EA who owns Plants vs. Zombies?
It's EA, yeah.
Yeah, so they teamed up with EA.
PopCap originally created it, and then I think EA acquired PopCap.
Yeah, you're right. And so it's interesting, but I've been to a few arcades here fairly recently. I haven't seen that game around. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's been released yet or if it's just still out there, but I don't know.
It's funny because every arcade over here, it doesn't matter where you go, every single arcade will have Daytona USA.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's just funny. It's funny because oh, God, I mean, if I had a machine of that, I would just be playing it constantly. I wouldn't eat or sleep or go to the bathroom. I would just play Daytona USA until I die.
What's funny, though, I wish, you know, I say that, you know, there's a lot that have them here, but there's not as many as I wish. The one game that, the one racing game that I see in every arcade, no matter what, is Cruisin' still. Or there's a Fast and Furious version of that game, like a knockoff of Cruisin' that you'll see around, too. And it's not nearly as good as the Cruisin' games, but that's always been really a huge racing game, like in the arcades, was the Cruisin' ones.
Are you referring to Cruisin' USA?
Yeah, Cruisin' USA.
You know, that's funny, actually, that you mentioned that, because I've noticed that's an entirely American phenomenon, because we got a lot of more, because you had Midway there.
Right.
And, like, Bally Arcade Amusements, and we didn't really have anything like that here. We basically just got Asian machines.
Oh, weird.
Because we're in the region. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in the region, so it was cheaper for us to import, like, you know, I mean, we got Mortal Kombat, we got Gauntlet Legends and things like that, but we didn't really get things like Cruisin' USA here.
Oh, wow, that's interesting.
It is interesting, because I've played it on 64, and it's actually pretty fun. So
the 64 port, that was a tough one. It was
stripped down.
It was very stripped down, and I mean, I felt like it wasn't able to, you know, get that feel, that arcade feel in the game that you were able to experience. Because what was great about it, I mean, because the steering wheel had like feedback in it and stuff too. So like it would it'd rumble, or you know, it would you know, shake and stuff depending on. I don't know. You just can't recreate that awesome, like, sit-down feel of an arcade racer in a controller. You just can't do that. So, anyway,
I mean, it was the same thing. It was great on Saturn, but it just did not play as well as it did in the arcades.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Chris, do you want to lead us into this? I'm gonna say amazing Kickstarter project.
Yeah, this is something, it was crazy, that I saw last night. We posted an article about it today. So it's a new Kickstarter project, and we're trying to be a lot more careful about the Kickstarter projects that we post on the site. But this one's pretty interesting. So there's a website. These guys come from HDRetrovision.com, and basically what they're looking to do is create component cables for the Sega Genesis and the Super Nintendo. Now they're going to have separate cables for the Model 1 and the Model 2 Genesis. The Model 1 is also going to be compatible with the Master System. It's only going to do mono audio out. The Model 2 cable is going to feature stereo output. It will also be compatible with the Nomad, the 32X, the Genesis 3, which that one only does mono output, but it'll also be compatible with the CDX and the XI, and they're doing a Super Nintendo cable as well. But it's pretty neat because looking through it, it says that they're really going to be able to clean up a lot of the artifacts and the blurriness, some of the sloppiness that you get using AV inputs. And what's important about a lot of this, because like if you say a lot of people only have like newer TVs now, not a lot of people have like the old school CRT TVs. I have one down in the basement, but it's just because my wife won't throw the damn thing away. So we hook up all of our old retro consoles to that. But so newer TVs, a lot of them don't have like S video inputs anymore. And so if you want to like get the best quality out of those old video game systems like the Genesis and whatnot, you really can't do it anymore. You just have to use the AV cables. But these component cables are aiming to fix that. Now they're not going to like upgrade the resolution or anything like that. It's just meant to kind of clear some of the some of the video quality in it. So here's something that they say on the Kickstarter page. The goal of this Kickstarter is to fund an initial production run of the Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo component cables. We have years of research and development under our belt. We have spent hours writing custom test software, testing a multitude of console hardware revisions, and building working prototypes. Now we're approaching the final production-ready cable design. We need your help to get us through the final steps to be able to produce these cables in a factory setting. So basically, a $35 pledge will get you a choice of the cable for your system, whether it's a Model 1 Genesis, a Model 2 Genesis, or the Super Nintendo. And this is pretty important, I think, for a lot of the retro collectors out there. What do you think about this, Andrew?
I think it's a really good idea. I've seen the video that they posted, and it does a decent job of demonstrating like the practical benefits of using it, because you really do notice a difference in, because a lot of, one thing you notice if you play a game that's designed for a CRT TV on an LCD or a plasma, is that like HUD elements will be blurry, text will be blurry, and really small details will be indistinct. So I can see that being a real benefit, especially considering, as you mentioned before, most TVs don't come with S video anymore, which is a real shame because that did wonders for picture quality, S video technology. I'm hoping that this isn't just like they tested 3 or 4 games and it worked really well, but it's not going to work with every game. Because a lot of games used alternative technologies in order to generate things on the screen. So, for instance, this is just an example, but Sonic Team, to get the effect of water in Sonic the Hedgehog, they played with the blitter on the video processor on the Mega Drive, which meant that they could get that kind of like translucent water look. I don't know if the cables would interfere with that, it remains to be seen. But as long as it consistently improves the quality of everything on a plasma and LCD, I can really see $35 being pretty good for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little expensive if you look at $35 for video cables for your Sega Genesis, because I mean you can get them off like eBay or Amazon for like $3-4 from like audio visual cables. So it's a little expensive, but like you said, reading text on some of these old games is a problem. I remember playing a few months ago. We had Alter Beast was our game of the month. And I was remember going back and playing it, and I was playing it on the Genesis, and I was just like, man, this game looks like shit now. Like playing it on my TV, like everything's blurry. Yeah. The text is blurry, and then when I would go play the the 3D remake version of it on my 3DS, it looked tons better. Like it was just the clarity was like you couldn't even compare it. It was just so much better.
Much better.
On that 3DS. I mean, it would just look way better. It was night and day difference. So if these cables can get even in between those from the original Genesis to the 3DS, I think it is absolutely worth it. I think people should go out there and check it out. They have a little ways to go. They're looking to raise, let's see here, my browser is spinning, about $25,000 is what they're looking to raise to get this up and going. So far, they've raised about $7,300, but they still have 28 days to go. So, you know, they've raised, you know, almost a third or so, or a fourth or so of what they're wanting to get. So they're looking pretty good. Hopefully this ends up, you know, succeeding. We've seen a lot of good Kickstarters come and go and end up failing. Yeah. But this is one that I think actually makes a lot of sense, and it's practical, and you know, it's not just a game that you're you know, looking to fund. This is going to be something that is going to benefit you for yeah. all of your, you know, games on your Genesis or Super Nintendo. So I think I'm gonna pledge and pick one up, man.
I think it's a really good idea. And again, I wish him the best of luck, because I love seeing that people. It's like people who repair consoles. Like, if you, Chris and I are fans of the TurboGrafx.
Yeah.
And a lot of the guys on the TurboGrafx Facebook groups actually repair consoles, and you know, they're fans as well. And if you send them the console and $100 or whatever, they'll recapacitor your console, things like that. I love that people take the time to do these things, because it means that we'll be able to enjoy our consoles for, you know, 30, 40, 50 more years. Because if they're getting, you know, minty fresh from the beginning, again, you are going to get that life cycle out of them. And it's the same thing for new cables, because composite cables, they can fail. They're a piece of electrical equipment, just like anything else, and components fail. So if your Genesis component composite cables fail, you can get a set of these, for instance, because they're going to be making them. So absolutely, I'd say this is one to pledge to.
What which one would you get, the Model 1 or Model 2 Genesis cables?
I don't actually like the Model 1 Mega Drive.
Why is
so
that?
So I have a Model 2. It's nice, but it's too bulky, because I've always found it to be too big. I think a console like the Mega Drive 2 is the perfect size, and I say it's too big simply because when I've got like space that I need to economize for with my collection, because I like having all my consoles out. I do not like having things boxed up.
Right.
Because I don't like collect. I don't have a collection. I have a library, I like to call it, of games, because they're games that I will actively play and enjoy. So I don't keep yeah. sealed games, for instance, because I don't see the point of looking at a box. So with consoles, I like to have them all out so they're on hand. So when I'm home from work, I'm like, you know, I want to play an hour of Mega Drive. I can just, you know, bust it out and play an hour. But I have room for a Model 1, unfortunately. So I like the Model 2 better. And I think it looks better with the 32X in it as well.
Yeah, the Model 2, I've always been a little partial to the Model 1 when it has the Sega CD. I like the Sega CD, the Model 1 Sega CD. I just like yeah. how it sits underneath it, and then you have the 32X on top. But I have both. I have the Sega CD you know, editions for yeah. both Model 1 and Model 2. I like them both probably equally, because I'm a little nostalgic with the Model 1 because that was the very first one I had growing up, and when I look at that, and so many memories come back to me for, you know, when we first got our very, very first Sega. So I like it for that reason. I like some of the aesthetics. I think it looks neat. But I really like the Model 2 as far as just, you know, push the button, it comes on. You know, it just seemed a little more futuristic compared to the Model 1.
Yeah.
And then it also had, you know, some of the stereo output and everything like that, some of the cool stuff with that. I think if I had to go for one, I would go for the Model 2, because that's the one I end up playing the most today. Because I have one, I keep a bunch on my shelf. I think I have like four or five Genesis around. But upstairs, connected to my big screen TV, is a Model 2 Genesis. So I think I would probably pick it up there. So I think that's the one I'm going to go for. I'm definitely going to get it. So anyways, so if you go to Kickstarter, we'll put a post in the link. But if you go to Kickstarter and just search Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo component cables, that's the title of their Kickstarter, you should be able to find it. And they need more backers. Go back them, and let's get this thing funded. So, yeah.
Yeah, this is something you want to fund.
Absolutely. So, you know, I know that it's no longer Halloween. That happened a couple of days ago, but we didn't get a chance to really talk about our favorite Sega horror games, during this month. If you've been reading the website, we've been publishing our Sega Horror Fest. This is the second year we've done it, and we've had a lot of fun with it. We've had a ton of reviews on old, Sega horror games. Andrew, you just mentioned you posted the very last one actually on Halloween was Resident Evil, which is really cool on the Sega Saturn. It sucks because I didn't realize that Resident Evil was available on the Saturn when I first when we made the decision to buy either a PlayStation or a Sega Saturn, my brother and I. I had a friend come over with his PlayStation, like right after it launched, he brought one over, and he brought Resident Evil over, and he put it in, and we started watching him play, and we were overcome with just pure fucking awesomeness. Looking back at Resident Evil today, you can't really get an idea of the sense of awe that we felt back then, because we had never seen anything as amazing as that. Like the graphics, the sound, the environment, and just everything that that they were able to create in that game. Back then, it was amazing. It was like top quality that no one's ever seen before. And that game sold us on the PlayStation. We're like, okay, that's it. That we're getting the PlayStation. My older brother wanted us to get a Saturn, but we're like, no, the PlayStation has Resident Evil, and we didn't know that the Saturn had it. Also, it really sucks because if we had known that, we probably could have been swayed to get a Saturn, because that was the main reason, the main game that we wanted. So,
well, that it ended up actually being. I don't want to spoil the review for you, but it ended up being the better version of the game.
The Saturn one?
The Saturn one, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
By far.
Why don't you tell the audience, why was the Saturn one better than the PlayStation?
So we'll talk about Resident Evil on Saturn. So originally, when it was, I go to a bit of the history of it, because I used to read official Saturn magazine when I was younger. I am fairly convinced that is the best video game related magazine ever made. The editors of Saturn magazine were diehard Sega fans that were amazing journalists, and they busted their asses to get the best content in that magazine that they could. So, if you ever get a chance, track down a copy of any that interests you, because they covered every Saturn game and then imports after. And read it, because it's amazing. But I first found out about Saturn Resident Evil from reading official Saturn magazine, and they covered it incomplete and mentioned that the game was looking at that point better than the PlayStation version. So, I mean, we were like, my friends and I were like, okay, well, I mean, it can't be better, because the PlayStation is better. That's what everyone tells us.
Right.
And then it came out, and at that point, I didn't have it, because my parents hated buying new games. And what used to happen is I used to wait ages and then miss games. So I actually missed it the first time around, but I remember reading about it. And then you play it, and the console got an amazing port. Capcom actually made the graphics superior to the PlayStation version. You may know that the PlayStation has a problem with seams on things. Like, for instance, arms will, like, clip into each other.
Right,
You know, things like that. The Saturn doesn't have the problem, because it used different geometry. So, with different geometry, it ended up looking rounder. Characters looked like people, look like people in it. They actually have facial features. There's a clearly distinct nose, for instance, instead of just a flat image. The graphics are cleaner, crisper, higher resolution, actually, on Saturn, and that's a proven fact. Capcom themselves said that. the game loads faster, it sounds better, it feels better on a Saturn controller. You also get battle mode, which is if you've ever played the Mercenaries mode in any of the newer Resident Evils, you'll feel right at home in battle mode because it's the same concept. So if you're a Saturn fan, I highly recommend picking it up. It's amazing.
Wow, I didn't really know that. That's pretty interesting. Huh. So what we wanted to basically talk about today, though, was just going back and looking back at some of our favorite Sega horror games. And for me, I was able to go back and play Vampire Master of Darkness on the Master System and Game Gear. That was one of my, I've only recently experienced this game over probably the last few years. Maybe 3-4 years ago, I didn't even know it existed. And one of the things that I really discovered with going back and playing this game is, just looking at it really quickly, it looks just like a Castlevania clone. Like it looks just like a blatant ripoff. And in a lot of ways it is. But what I realized going back and playing Vampire Master of Darkness is, I think it does certain things better than any of the Castlevania games on the NES. I mean, there was, I think, Castlevania 1 through 3 was on the NES, and then 4 was the first one on the Super Nintendo. But correct. Just from a visual standpoint, the graphics, I thought, in Master of Darkness looked a lot better than Castlevania 3, in my opinion. Just the use of the colors in the game, I thought they just a better variety of colors. The enemies just looked, I thought they looked cooler. It has some stuff going against it because, I mean, Castlevania has such an iconic, story and everything going along with it, this, battle against Dracula and everything. And, Master of Darkness, basically, you're this parapsychologist named Dr. Social. And he's using his Ouija board one night, and it tells him that Dracula has come back and is murdering all these people, like in London. And he's been studying these disappearances of people and trying to figure out what's happening. Come to find out, it's actually Dracula. So he has to go to London and try to uncover, what's happening and ultimately defeat Dracula. And you go through about 6 or 7 levels doing that. And there's such a really neat variety in the levels also. Like, the first level, it's you're basically on the river. Is it Thames?
Thames, yeah.
Yeah, in London. If you judge it just based off that level alone, you would think that it's fairly boring. But the next level, you go into like a wax museum, and there's stuff gets really kind of crazy from there. And there's just, it goes on from there, and there's some really cool enemies in the game. And I found myself really enjoying that game, and no one talks about that game anymore. And I felt really kind of bummed out that it never got a chance for like a sequel, because I think that game could have done something neat and possibly could have went on and further kind of separated itself from just being a Castlevania clone and kind of found its own identity. And I would have liked to have seen, that hopefully, try to do something, you know what I mean?
Well, there's a story behind Master of Darkness in that it was actually one of the last wave Master System games in Europe and the United States. And I think it only got released on Game Gear in the US, didn't it? Released on Master System?
It didn't get released on Master System. It was Game Gear only.
Yeah. So it is, just so you know, Master System games are region free, so you can import it if you are a US Master System player and play it on your MS. But it was one of the last waves, and it was intentionally designed by Sega to get the most out of the console as it was in the last throes of its commercial viability in Europe. Now, they released Vampire, Master of Darkness, they released Golden Axe Warrior. That was another one that was a clone of Zelda. And the problem is these games actually do more than the games that they're supposedly cloning. And it's a shame because at the time they got shoehorned as a Castlevania clone and a Zelda clone, and they still get shoehorned as a Castlevania clone and a Zelda clone. But the point is they are in their own right excellent games. I mean, Chris mentioned there are, you know, there's the Waxworks, and then my favorite level is the Clock Tower, which I think is meant to be Big Ben. But it does so much more than a game like Castlevania, which I never really got into to begin with. I always found the Castlevania games to be too, I don't know, offensively difficult for their own good.
Ah, yeah.
And Master of Darkness doesn't have that problem. It's very accessible. There's a bit of pattern recognition you have to do, but other than that, it's just it's a romp. Really, it's just a romp, and I love it.
Yeah, you went back and talked a little bit, you know, about some of the, you know, Golden Axe Warrior and Vampire Master of Darkness, about how they were kind of clones. And, you know, there was really a reason why Sega had to go back and make some of these games that, you know, were, you know, quote-unquote clones of some of these games. And that really goes back to the publishing agreement that, you know, Nintendo forced developers and other publishers to agree to when they came to create games on their systems. They basically, back then, if you don't know, is they forced them to agree to these contracts that basically said that they could only make games for Nintendo and no one else. So if you're going to make games on Nintendo, you could not make a game on a competing hardware, which the Master System and Genesis was. And being that Nintendo at that time was the biggest, you know, video game console on the market, it had a huge market share. You know, it was crazy for anyone to go back and not do that. So basically everyone were creating games for Nintendo, and Sega with its Master System was kind of left out in the cold. You know, you just didn't have a lot of these games. So instead of just saying, okay, you know, we're just going to try to create our own original games, there were times where Sega was like, all right, you know, this, say Castlevania, for instance, this is a game that has a really unique visual style and gameplay style that we want on our system. So instead of, you know, trying to compete with Nintendo, try to get Capcom to bring it to the system, they said, hey, we're going to have our own internal development studio, and we're going to go out and make a game that's like that, that can appeal to, you know, our demographic and bring those players there. And the same thing with Golden Axe Warrior with Legend of Zelda. And so it's basically Sega going out and saying, we can create a game like that, but, you know, we can even make it better. So it's kind of neat.
Pretty much, and they did. Because arguably, I mean, the years had passed by the time these games had released, and they were obsolete by this point, but they were still fantastic games. And if you wanted to put them side by side, you could, and Sega would come out on top because they were superior gameplay experiences. I mean, with Master of Darkness being more accessible, Golden Axe Warrior being a bigger game with a more interesting universe, they ended up being superior. And the graphics in Golden Axe Warrior, if you've never seen it, they really push what the Master System's capable of color-wise, because that is a damn colorful game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's,
yeah, they're fantastic.
So I want to know, what are some of your, you know, other favorite Sega horror games?
Well, look, I've got a few, because my generation was late Saturn. Well, Mega Drive as well, but that was more of a consequence of not being able to afford a Saturn when I lived in England. But when I moved to Australia, I was late Saturn, Dreamcast, and PC. So I ended up getting a lot of Sega games. You know the Sega PC branch they had?
Yeah.
I played a lot of Saturn games that were ported to PC, like Panzer Dragoon, the first time I played that, Bug, the first time I played that, that was all on PC.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it ended up being great for me because I was able to play these, you know, games that I couldn't get on Saturn. Shift on my seat here. So Enemy Zero is one of my favorite games of all time, and I know Cop K, the exact same thing, he'd say the same thing. That game is just stunning to look at. It's an incredibly nerve-wracking game because you can't actually see the antagonist in that. You have to use your echolocator, which isn't very good generally. It's quite unreliable. So a lot of the time you end up firing blindly, but you can't do that because you can only recharge your laser gun like three or four times. And saves are very, very rare as well. You can only save a certain amount of times because you have battery life on your recorder. And it's hard game, but it's so much fun, and it's definitely one of the must-haves on the Saturn. Now, another one of my favorites, which obviously I've touched on, is Resident Evil on Saturn, because I think it's an amazing port that does the console justice for once, like, because it got a lot of lazy ports, especially from EA, but it was great to see Capcom do that. And one that I don't know if this is really a good game, but it's one that I really enjoy. It's called Carrier.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think I have that on my shelf somewhere.
Oh, really? There you go. You know all about it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember playing it on, I think, one of the official Dreamcast magazine issues had a demo disc of it. I played that, and then I bought it again some years later. But I never really put enough time into it. I know it was a Resident Evil style game, but I think you were on some sort of ship, right?
Yeah, you were on a ship. It was like a tanker, I think.
Yeah, but I never put a lot of time into it. So, you know, whatever you can tell me about it, I'd be interested in learning, because I don't really know a lot about Carrier.
Well, the gimmick in that one was you could aim anywhere you wanted.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And it wasn't like it was a great idea that wasn't executed the best way it could have been, because of the way the camera angles worked, sometimes enemies would be off screen, and if you were trying to aim at them and target them with this reticule, which you could move all over them, I mean, you can see what you were doing. It wasn't like Resident Evil where it would auto aim and do the best shots for you, because you could do headshots, you could do limb shots, but you had to target them yourself. And it was a great mechanic that I don't think was realized the best it could have been. So Carrier, I think, is one of those games where it's like halfway between being good and being awful. And it's really a lot of fun, though, if you ever get a chance to play it. And there's one, I don't remember the name in Japanese, but I actually reviewed it. I have a show on my YouTube channel called Terror Games, and I reviewed it. It's a Dreamcast game called it's Seven Mansions. It translates to Seven Mansions, but it's some weird ass long name like Senritsu no Bishan Hinkatsu or something.
Oh,
really?
Yeah,
long. Yeah, yeah. I think, have you seen that episode of that show? Or
I watched it. Yeah, it was really funny.
Yeah, there you go. The game is hilarious. The actual content of it is it's interesting, because you've got two characters, and each one obviously has a different story, like Resident Evil, and you can actually use like four different viewpoints. Like, you can use a Resident Evil style camera, first person, third person over the shoulder, and there's another one, like a follow cam. And it's got an interesting combat system where you have to like charge up your attacks, and it's very hard to play because it's in Japanese. It was never translated, but if you can find a copy of it cheap, which you generally can't, I'd recommend picking it up if you're a Dreamcast player, because it's a great little game, and it looks good too. So, Chris, what's your excuse? Why haven't you played it yet?
I don't know, man. I'm terrible. I have it. I think I have it. It's somewhere up there. But was it? Oh man, the guy who created that, didn't he do another like survival horror game on the Dreamcast? I don't know.
I don't think so. But there was one. You might be thinking of D2. Are you thinking of D2?
Maybe. And maybe I was thinking Illbleed.
Oh, you might have been thinking of Illbleed, yeah. Illbleed's good, though. That's a great game.
I think that might be... Is it Capcom that did Illbleed, though? I don't know.
No, that was... It was one of those studios that released, like, four games and disappeared. D2 was really good, though, too, actually. If you ever get a chance to play it, that was unfairly criticized, in my opinion.
I think I may have played the first D game. Was it the first one released on PlayStation?
Yeah, and Saturn and 3DO,
I think. Yeah, I remember playing that on our PlayStation, but I don't know if I ever got a chance to play D2.
D2 is a more traditional survival horror, but it's almost free roaming, because you can go all over this Arctic landscape, drive a snowmobile. enemies will pop up at random and you have to kill them, and when you go into combat, it goes into first person. You get stuck, like, rooted to the spot, and you have to shoot them in, like, a target shooting game, and it's nuts, man.
I'm reading here that they actually had a sequel planned for Carrier called Carrier the Next Mutation on the PlayStation 2, but it
ended
up getting canceled. And
that's a shame.
If you go to the wiki page for Carrier, there's a link on IGN. They had a hands-on article of it during the Tokyo Game Show in 2000. So you can go back and kind of read what they thought of the sequel that never was for Carrier. That's too bad.
So that's really interesting that they actually had Carrier the Next Mutation is once planned for release.
I wonder if they have any images or anything of it.
It'd be great if they had screenshots that I could drool over. There's more than just plants to whack. Apparently, whack.
It says it features familiar character designs in a similar setting. It will evidently tell an entirely new story. It said the aircraft carrier where the first game took place did appear in the brief cinematic trailer video for the game, so there's probably some sort of connection.
Yeah, it looks like it might have been a Resident Evil style sequel where they just, like, got the same engine.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
Yeah, I put half a dozen bullets in this ugly brown frog thing, but he kept whacking me. Early games are sometimes like that, though. As ugly frog things go, it looked pretty good, though.
Oh, man, I really need to get
to the ugly frog things.
Oh, I know. How could we have done that? That's some of our, some of our favorite Sega horror games. There's so many, though. I mean, if you go back and look on the site, if you want to look at some of the other Sega horror games, and we have Splatterhouse. Blake did all the Splatterhouse games on Genesis platforms. And there's just a lot of other good. We have Condemned on there. Graham reviewed Enemy Zero. There's just a ton out there. If you feel like we didn't, either review or talk about one of your favorite Sega horror games, let us know in the comments and tell us, you know, why you think those are some good games to go back and play.
Be gentle.
Yeah. Really quickly, let's talk about what we've been playing this week. Andrew, what have you been up to? What have you been playing?
Well, as I mentioned at the beginning of the Nerdcast, I have been playing The Evil Within. It's actually really good. It's like Resident Evil 4 X2, I guess. It just feels a lot like Resident Evil 4. Except it's got a lot of mechanics. Yeah, no, the thing is, Resident Evil 4 it's funny because every time they released that they were going to be announced that they were going to be releasing a new port, I would buy it. And I ended up buying it on GameCube and PlayStation 2 and PC, and if they released it on Game Boy, I would have bought a Game Boy port of it as well. But it's something that is close to my heart. It's one of my favorite games of all time, and when The Evil Within came out and I started playing it, I was like, this is just bringing back so many memories. And I finished it, and I'm like, there's got to be a new game plus, and there was a new game plus, and it's now consumed 18 hours of my time, and it's going to get more because I haven't got all the trophies yet, and you get all the trophies. And there's apparently a hard mode that's so hard that most people who have tried it have quit.
Oh, man.
So I'm interested in quit, and by quit, I mean walked out of an elevator. That was in between floors. I'm looking forward to trying that. It's apparently super difficult. So that's one of them. I busted out my 3DO earlier this week because I really felt like playing some 3DO games. I played Shockwave, which is a really fun space shooter from EA. I played Killing Time, which is a great first-person shooter on the console. Which was released on PC as well. So if you don't have a 3DO, you can play it on PC. What else did I play? Iron Angel of the Apocalypse, which is a good one as well. It's got a great name too. It sounds like a heavy metal band.
Did you say Maya Angelou?
Maya Angelou of the Apocalypse.
That's what I thought you said. That sounds like an awesome game.
That's how the world ends. Giant Maya Angelou looms over the planet. She's like, what's that Marvel character that eats worlds?
Oh, man. Oh, shit. I forget.
Graham Cook's an eater of worlds. No, it's, no, it's, yeah, yeah, that's the way I want the world to end, Maya Angelou. So, how about you, Chris? Have you played any other games by civil rights activists
recently? I wish I could play Maya Angelou, the Destroyer of Worlds, but no, pretty much the only thing I've been playing this week is Bayonetta 2. I've been putting a lot of time in that because I really like, I think I was telling you before we started, I really want to go back and finish Bayonetta 2. Then I have to go back and play the first Bayonetta on the Wii U because I want to. I never beat it on the PlayStation. I've said that a few times now on the PS3 or Xbox 360 version. I haven't beaten that one yet. So I want to go back and play that, but I feel really pressured because I have to hurry up and beat it because there are so many releases coming out here in November. There's just a ton. We have Valkyria Chronicles. We have the Sonic Boom games on the 3DS and Wii U. Just a lot. So I feel like I'm trying to put in a lot of time and having to hurry up and get through it. But I'm about 6 hours into the game so far. I think I'm on chapter like 9 or 10. And up to this point, I've been playing on normal difficulty, and I've pretty much like flown through the game relatively easily, and then I've got to this one boss, and I don't want to say his name or anything like that because I just don't want to piss anyone off because of spoilers, but it's really difficult. I've got to a point where I'm like, okay, for the first time, I can't beat this guy, so I'm trying to... I've probably fought him about 7 or 8 times now. And one of the biggest things I'm coming across, it seems like he's just got a ridiculous long like health bar. Because in Bayonetta, you know, some of the bosses, his health bar will deplete, and then there's just like another color health bar behind that one. So you have to deplete a health bar like 5 or 6 times sometimes, and this is what this guy is. And I just can't end up dodging enough of his super attacks before he ends up ultimately. Killing me. So, and I don't have enough items to be able to craft like any healing potions or anything like that in the game.
Oh man, you're
so it's picky. I'm at a tough spot. So I'm just gonna have to get through it. But up to this point, man, I am really enjoying this game. It is so much fun. The combat. It's just so fluid. It's just so much fun to play. Like I really enjoy opening up new combos, unlocking new things, going and purchasing new weapons, and seeing how those make the game and the combat different, and all the new combos that it unlocks and opens up for you. The storyline, it's taken a little bit of I'm still a little confused as far as like what's happening because I didn't beat the first one. I wish that it kind of recapped a little bit for you and just kind of brought you up to speed if you hadn't played the first one. So I'm not really sure exactly what's going on. And I think part of that is just because Bayonetta games are just so crazy to begin with. It's hard to really wrap your head around exactly what's going on in the game. I think it's kind of purposeful with that. But, man... this game is so good, and had Sega published this game, I really think this would have been Sega's best game of the year. I think as good as Alien Isolation is, and it is such a good game, but if you're looking at it from just a pure fun standpoint, like just how fun this game is, I think Bayonetta has it beat, and I think Bayonetta is ultimately a better, a more highly polished game than Alien Isolation. I think it would have been Sega's best game. And who knows, man, it may end up selling better than Alien Isolation in the end because it seems like just...
It might.
Just from word of mouth, just on social media, what I've been seeing, like so many people have still been talking about this game. It's been selling really well in the UK. We'll find out tomorrow how it did this past week. It seems like it's doing really well, and I really... wish all the best for Platinum Games because I would love to see them create
absolutely
a Bayonetta 3.
I was going to say, I was just going to put in my 2 cents about the whole it's selling well thing because I think, Chris, you know what I'm going to say here. I tried to buy the game.
Yeah.
I walked into EB Games and I'm like, can I buy Bayonetta 2 with the money that I have in my wallet right now to give you for the game? And the guy's like, we don't have any. And I'm like, okay, who does? And he looked on the computer, he's like, no one in all of Australia. I'm like, are you joking? It's sold out nationwide.
That's crazy.
Like, it's mental. And no one had it. JB Hi-Fi, which is a major electronics retailer over here, nothing. Target freaking ran out of the game, and no one buys games at Target.
I didn't even know Target is in Australia.
Yeah, we've got Target, Kmart, we've got Costco, most of the big ones.
That's crazy. I wonder if it's a matter of them just not ordering enough and realizing that there was going to be a higher demand for the game, or if there's just such a high demand for the game that it sold through, like, even though they may have stocked it as they would any other popular game.
I think they just went, Australia doesn't count. Australia doesn't buy games.
Yeah.
And
that's crazy.
And we got like four.
That's too bad. Digital. That's too bad. Maybe you're just gonna have to buy it digitally.
I might. I hate buying digital games though. Like, unless it's absolutely necessary.
In this case it might be.
I'm actually addicted to smelling discs.
There's something about unwrapping a disc and then sitting it on your shelf and just looking at it sitting there on your shelf.
It makes me feel better about the money that I just spent.
Well, it's a tangible thing, you know, that's not invisible. So you feel like you actually bought something that matters. And then if you just bought something digitally, you can just forget about it. And then it's not anywhere that you can see. At least if you have a physical disc, you can walk by and be like, oh, shit, there's Bayonetta 2. I haven't played that game yet. I should probably play that. So
pick that up and play it. And Gabe Newell's just, like, rolling around in your money eating cheeseburgers. He uses.
Yeah, he is. So
let's be honest.
I think that's going to do it for the show this week. You know, like we said, there's a ton of great Horror Fest-related content on the site. So, you know, if you're looking for some scary games to go back and play, go out and check the Horror Fest reviews. Blake just posted his next Sega Does What Nintendo Don't from A to Z feature. I think he's on letter E right now, which focuses on EA and Sega and some of the early relationship between Sega and EA. It wasn't always such a bad thing between those two. And so he kind of goes back and does that. It's really interesting. So we got a lot of great content. Kopke also has an exclusive interview with Crush 40, who is a very popular Sonic-related band. So go and check that out. Just a lot of great content on the site this week. Go and check it all out. And join the forums. Go over there, register on the site, and go and do that. And I think it's going to do it. So we will see you next week. Hopefully Graham will be back and recover from his Ebola outbreak.
Fingers crossed. One like equals one prayer.
And that is it. See you later.